All that infrastructure we're supposed to build may run into tariffed up metal prices. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. More than 2,000 mayors, city managers, and others are in Washington for a National League of Cities conference. Many will work in some lobbying while there, including asking for infrastructure money. But the president's new tariffs may be a complication. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer explains.
Steel prices spiked after President Trump announced his tariffs last week. Infrastructure projects, especially bridges, use lots of steel. Harry LaRosselier is mayor of Plano, Texas.
It shrinks the project. What you could have done with $1 million now might cost $1.2 million, for all we know.
Steel from Canada and Mexico is exempt from the tariffs, at least for now. And Canada is our biggest steel supplier. But tariffs will apply to other suppliers like Brazil. An Association of Equipment Manufacturers lobbyist Nick Yaksik says there's another problem, uncertainty.
Kind of bewilderment, you know, in terms of the timing of it.
Just days before the announcement, Yaksik went to a meeting at the White House on infrastructure. And it was finally getting some attention on Capitol Hill. Then came the tariffs.
It is a distraction away from what we hope would be the congressional agenda going forward in a bipartisan way.
After all, higher steel prices are only an issue if you're actually spending money on infrastructure. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
More now on the Trump administration's new plans to deal with gun violence. There's $50 million for school safety improvements. But about this new commission to study the impact of raising the age to buy a gun, the effects of violent video games, and press coverage of mass shootings. Joining us from our health desk at WHYY is Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein. Dan, as we've reported in the past, the government doesn't gather much data on guns and violence. Could this new commission change that, you think?
Maybe a little, but that's just because we know so little. You've got to remember there's not much recent data on gun violence. That's due to a series of moves made by Congress dating back to 1996, restricting research on gun violence. Because of that, federal funding has largely dried up. In terms of this specific commission, Harvard Health Professor David Hemenway says we already know a lot about violent video games. They're not good for kids, but we need to learn more, a lot more, about how the media covers mass shootings and brain development.
Something like the age restriction, we have no real study. We have evidence that 19 and 20-year-olds they have adult bodies, but not adult brains. And so they behave often more aggressively and violently than if you 25 or 30 year olds.
Hemenway says the nation doesn't need another commission. Hard data, he says, is what the country needs.
Dan, thank you very much. Guessing who succeeds Lloyd Blankfein at the top of the financial powerhouse Goldman Sachs has been a parlor game across Wall Street here. The favorites have been Harvey Schwartz and David Solomon, who've been co-chief operating officers. An announcement this morning suggests Solomon is the one in line for the Goldman Sachs throne, with the news today that Schwartz will step down. Among his many talents, David Solomon likes to DJ at clubs. DJ D-Sol. I'm not kidding. Years ago this week, the fifth largest investment bank in the U.S., Bear Stearns, was on the brink of collapse and was bought by J.P. Morgan Chase for pennies on the dollar. It was a shocking early chapter in the financial crisis, a disaster that reached from Wall Street into homes across America. I think it's fair to say all of our lives were affected in large and small ways, from jobs to homes to health. As part of our series, Divided Decade, we've been hearing stories from all over the country about how the financial crisis changed people. Today, let's listen to Rick Lockett in Oklahoma.
2008 was when I began my third and final year of law school. I don't think that any of us were really prepared for the environment that we were going to be graduating into. Sending out all kinds of applications to various firms. It was always a little bit of a shock when I even received a rejection letter. Most firms wouldn't even give those. So by the time I was set to sit down and start preparing for the bar exam, there was just nothing on the horizon. All of my savings had been wiped out. I started couch surfing with friends. I had no money and I needed to find work of any kind just so I could have a place to live. I was a doorman at the Royal House Oyster Bar on the corner of Royal and St. Louis in New Orleans, and I'll be honest, it was kind of soul-crushing. I entered into a pretty long period of depression. I really had no prospects of how I was going to dig myself out of this hole, and to a large extent, I still don't. An awful lot of the people that I went to school with were eventually able to find something within their field, and an awful lot were not. I know of one or two classmates of mine that committed suicide after several years of trying and failing to be able to get anywhere. The people who were really hurt by the downturn of 2008 were not people who invested in subprime mortgages. There's a kind of resentment that I have towards how callous it feels that so many people lost so much who had nothing to do with what happened.
See photos of Rick Lockett on Instagram at Marketplace APM. Marketplace's Kai Ryssdal is also going to be talking to three of the people who tried to pilot the financial system during the worst of the mess, Bernanke, Paulson, Geithner. Why don't you help Kai prep for that by sending us a question for those at the Fed and the Treasury 10 years ago? Send us your questions via Facebook. Marketplace APM does that. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.